Oregon's last surviving Civil War vet lived a quiet, respectable life after the Civil War. But during the Civil War, not so much. I'm going to tell you all about Oregon's last Civil War vet, who I kind of like to refer to as the black sheep of the Union Army. And it's a wonderful story. It's coming up in just a minute, but first I better introduce myself. I'm Finn J.D. John, and I write a weekly newspaper column that runs in about a dozen newspapers around the state right now. It's called Offbeat Oregon History. Details about it are at offbeatoregon.com if you're curious. Right now you're listening to a column from our archives, one that was first published on November 20th, 2011. I'm going to read it to you now. If you'd like more information about the column and the RSS feeds, stay tuned. If you had told James W. Smith of Lebanon that people would one day visit his grave to pay tribute to his service in the Union Army during the Civil War, he might have laughed. He might also have run for the door. The unit of the Union Army in which Smith served had a bit of a reputation, see. During their three-month operating career, before the Army wised up and disbanded them, Smith's unit became known among regular Army units as Olney's 40 Thieves. The story of the 40 Thieves Company is an obscure one. It hasn't been studied much. There isn't a whole lot of information about it out there, actually. But what we do know is that it formed as a unit of 40 citizen soldiers under the command of brothers Nathan and Orville Olney late in the war, in July 1864. Its official name was Olney's Detachment of the Oregon Cavalry, and it was tasked with patrolling and providing security for important parts of the Columbia River Gorge. This it may have, in fact, done. But it's tempting to think the Olney Detachment's real contribution to history was the invention, or at least the refinement, of the art of security theater. Today, of course, a modern form of security theater is performed daily in hundreds of airports across the country, especially the ones equipped with backscatter scanners. A stranger in an official-looking hat looks at images of you naked, talks to you like a New Orleans cop interrogating a murder suspect, and confiscates your toothpaste before letting you on the plane. The idea is to inconvenience you so much, you think the security guys are really on the ball, and quit worrying about the headline you read earlier this year about the loaded .38 special that fell out of someone's luggage at LAX. The Olney brothers were early adopters of another form of security theater, which they practiced up and down the Columbia River Gorge. They had it working so that not only did it provide a pantomime of security-related action on their part, it paid nice financial dividends as well on the side. Here's how it worked. At the time, Union Army soldiers enjoyed some of the finest clothing to be found on the frontier, including long, heavy blue wool coats that were much prized. The Olney boys developed a nice little scam in which the company would sell off its coats and other valuable Army stuff in one town, then go to another. There, they would claim to have just returned from action against the Indians in which their supplies were all seized by the enemy. Then they would send word to the Army that they needed more. They did this several times. They also acquired a reputation for, as historian Randall B. Fletcher puts it, fundraising from the citizens they were supposed to be protecting. Surely we can't credit the Olney Company with having invented the protection racket, but it appears they weren't strangers to the concept either. And this is probably why, in October 1864, at a time when the Union Army needed every man it could get hold of, it canned these 40 men outright. Some of them may have found their way into other military units, but Olney's company as such ceased to exist 8 months before the war itself ended. Now let's skip ahead to September 1950. The commander of the Grand Army of the Republic, Theodore A. Penland of Portland, has just died. The state of Oregon grieves the loss of what it thinks is its last surviving veteran of the American Civil War. Penland was just the kind of veteran that makes a state proud. As a lad of 16 in Illinois, he desperately wanted to join the Army and fight, but he wasn't the kind of kid who can just tell a lie and feel okay about it. So he was turned away twice when they asked him his age. Finally, he wrote the number 18 on two pieces of paper and stuck one into each boot, so that when asked, he could tell the recruiter that he was over 18 now. Actually, that would have meant that he was over 36, but I quibble. That did the trick, though. After the war, Penland moved out west and joined the Grand Army of the Republic, the exclusive Civil War Veterans Association. In the GAR, Penland distinguished himself as he'd never been able to do in the actual Army. As you can imagine, being 16, it would be sort of hard to distinguish oneself. By the time he moved to Portland, he was in his 70s, though, and already high in the organization's rankings, a sought-after public speaker and radio personality who loved to talk about his experiences in the war and the time he saw President Lincoln. In 1949, at the very last annual GAR meeting, the surviving members of the GAR voted Penland their commander-in-chief, a title he held until he died. So Theodore Penland of Portland was the last commander-in-chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, ever. When he died, the state of Oregon grieved, thinking it had lost its last Civil War veteran. But sometime later, somehow it came to the state's attention that it had missed one. That's right. Oregon's last surviving Civil War vet was not the heroically active and patriotic Penland, but, not to beat around the bush too much, one of Olney's 40 thieves. That would be James W. Smith. After being booted out of the army with his comrades slash co-conspirators, Smith had settled in Lebanon and lived a quiet, law-abiding life. He never applied for a pension. He apparently never even contacted the GAR. Perhaps he was embarrassed by the wildness of his youth. Or perhaps he thought he might have warrants. Who knows? Smith died at the age of 108, 6 months later than Penland. And it took a while for Oregon to figure out its mistake. But on June 23, 2010, the Sons of Union veterans officially rectified it when they gathered around his modest grave in the Odd Fellows Cemetery and, in a graveside service including a musket salute, affixed a brass plaque to the stone identifying him as Oregon's last Civil War vet. It's hard not to notice what a great metaphor Smith was for his home state of Oregon. Wild and more than a little notorious in its youth, grown mature and mellow with age, but still with that old rascally twinkle in its eye. That's the end of today's column. If you're listening for the first time, here's some information about this podcast and about the Offbeat Oregon History column. Offbeat Oregon History tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories that everyone's forgotten. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai'd sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. It's a weekly column, and I've been writing it since 2008, so right now there are about 175 published episodes in the kitty. Every morning I pull an episode up out of the archives and put it out on the daily RSS feeds, one in text and pictures for your newsreader, and another one like this one, in audio for your podcatcher. You can read any archive column and subscribe to either daily feed by going to the website at offbeatoregon.com. Both feeds are optimized for smartphone or iPhone use, but they work great on a tablet or a netbook or a computer. All the columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening, and do drop me a line if you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of coffee. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Have a great day.